Mit Hashem, we have the two following weeks to deal with the matters of Pesach, which leaves us this week to consult the Parsha of Vayikra. And this week we open the new Chumash Vayikra, known as Taras Kohanim by Chazal, and indeed it is devoted in the main to matters relating to Kohanim, particularly the topic of korbanos. And as we know, and we've discussed in the past, there is a major debate, a dispute, between the great Rishonim as to how to understand what is behind korbanos, what is behind the mitzvah of korbanos. We have the Rambam on the one hand in the Sefer Mor Nevuchim, and the Ramban who reacts quite strongly to Rambam's position, and as we'll see, once we express both of these positions, there may be more to say. The Rambam, famously, in more than one place, in fact, in the Mor Nevuchim, maintains that the concept of korbanos is essentially, and at the risk of oversimplifying or over-summarizing, is essentially a concession to the way that the Jewish people at the time of Matan Torah, perhaps beyond, related to a religion, related to a relationship with Hashem. That is to say, all other, one cannot really use the term other religions, but all other ways that they had seen had the idea of korbanos very much in the fabric of the religious activities. And therefore, it seems that the Jewish people would not have been able to relate to Hashem in such an abstract or perhaps more spiritual way without this area called korbanos. And therefore, the Torah almost sanitizes and koshers the area of korbanos to provide it for the Jewish people. These are kosher korbanos. That's the position of Rambam in brief. Ramban, however, in the beginning of this week's Parsha, Perek Aleph Pasuk Tes, strongly contests this position, because according to the Rambam, there's room to say that there is no essential value in korbanos, other than if people can't do without them, so here's the proper way to do them. But Ramban marshals many sources that indeed there is immense positive and intrinsic value in korbanos. Again, at the risk of oversimplifying, in the words of Ramban, the korbanos have the effect of aligning and of connecting all of the higher realms and bringing them together so that ultimately the Shechinah itself is brought closer to the world and divine influence flows into the world. Ramban, I do not believe he himself says this, but others point out, korban is from the word karov. These are things that keep the divine presence close to the world and to the Jewish people in particular. Now, this is something we've discussed at length in the past, and there's many sources to be adduced for both sides, in fact. And then we find a fascinating approach. And it is from the Meshech Chochma in his introduction to Chumash Vayikra. He has a hakdoma to Sefer Vayikra. Hakadmonim nechleku v'tama korbanos. The greats, the early greats, they disputed the reasoning behind korbanos. And then says Meshech Chochma, v'ulai yesh lehachria. Perhaps one can arbiter. That is to say, perhaps one can find a middle path. Perhaps one can harmonize, in a sense, these two approaches. Now, we should appreciate that, as we will describe, the harmonization of Meshech Chochma, he does not maintain that this reflects either the position purely of Rambam or Ramban. As far as they're concerned, each one states his position seemingly across the board. But nonetheless, the Meshech Chochma is looking to harness both and see how there is actually room for both perspectives, depending. And what is the crux of what Reish HaChochma says. As we know, korbanos can be brought in one of two places, or in one of two venues. You have on the one hand the center of Avodah, which is, at the time of the Mishkan, it's the Mishkan, and then subsequently it's the Beis HaMikdash. That's the center of Avodah. And then you have another concept, which is called Bamos. Bamos, literally high places, practically private altars, private mezbechos. A person can make a bama in their backyard, or on their mepeset, or on their roof, and offer a korban there. And now, says Reish HaChochma, there is room to say that the question of what korbanos are about depends of where you are talking about. Are you talking about korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, or are you talking about korbanos in bamos? When it comes to Beis HaMikdash, says Reish HaChochma, that's where it's happening. That's the spiritual center of the Jewish people. That's where all of the procedures which bring the spiritual well-being of the Jewish people and the world to its optimum, and that includes korbanos. And there we would say, we would adopt the position of Ramban, namely that all the aligning and all the connecting of from the higher realms down to the lower realms, and the whole way the technology of korbanos works, that all happens with korbanos that are brought in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is why the Torah is much more particular as to how korbanos are brought in the Beis HaMikdash. It cannot be brought just by anyone. It can only be brought by a Kohen. And Kohanim are more connected with the way the korbanos are working. In contrast, the Torah's allowance for bamos, incidentally, but importantly, when there is no Mishkan, when there is no Beis HaMikdash, in the absence of the center of Avodah where korbanos fulfill, shall we say, their positive role, their essential role, then they have at the very least this preventative role, or this concession role, in terms of people need korbanos, this isn't really the Beis HaMikdash, and it doesn't need to be a Kohen who offers a korban on a bama. It can be anyone, because if anyone needs it, then anyone should be able to bring it. It's also true, important as well to point out, that the category of korbanos that is offered on a bama, on a private altar, differs from that which is in the Beis HaMikdash. A private altar is specifically for voluntary korbanos, which, as far as Reish HaChochma is concerned, makes perfect sense. Because if a person feels the need to bring a korban, that they bring a korban. The Torah is not going to tell you to bring a korban on a bama. Any korban which is an obligation could only be brought in the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. Voluntary korbanos, they can be brought on a bama. And therefore, if we could perhaps summarize what we have said and put it into one sentence, as far as Reish HaChochma is concerned, the question as to what a korban is doing depends on where the korban is being offered. If it's in the Beis HaMikdash, then it's fulfilling a positive and contributive role, the way the Ramban describes, whereas if it's a bama, it is more the concession role that the Rambam is talking about. Now, on the one hand, this is a very striking statement on the part of the Reish HaChochma, taking upon himself to, I wouldn't say make shalom between the Rambam and Ramban, but somehow to straddle between those two viewpoints, which are really pitted against each other, and to have a broader vision which makes room for both of them. But the truth of the matter is, says Reish HaChochma, initially it occurred to me that one could perhaps unify or harmonize in this way, and subsequently I found an earlier authority who expresses this blended approach, and he is the Ralbag. The Ralbag, Rabbeinu Levi ben Gershom, another of the major Rishonim who has a perish on the Torah and also a perish on Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And what's very interesting about Ralbag is that not only does he have a commentary on Nevi'im and Ksuvim, but every once in a while he summarizes the ideas that come out. They're known as the Toelios, the Toelis, the lessons to be learned, the messages to be gleaned. And, says Reish HaChochma, if you look in the Ralbag, in Melachim Aleph, Perek Gimel, in in the Toelios there, and it helps to be Meshech Chochma to have all of this available to you. The truth is, it's available to all of us, so we should restate, if you're Meshech Chochma, you know it all. And I think it would be most illuminating, as Rav Kupperman Zatzal quotes the Ralbag in his explanatory notes to Meshech Chochma, and as we see just a few lines, you'll hear Meshech Chochma's thesis loud and clear, coming from Ralbag, and that's an important gain for Meshech Chochma. Says Ralbag, the context is Bomos, not surprisingly, She'ein ha-kavana be-korbonos, the intent and the idea behind korbonos is Mashiach idu alav misodos hamatzius, that which is apparent about korbonos, misodos hamatzius, from the very inner understanding of existence itself. Korbonos develop that, korbonos enhance that. People who are set aside for this avoda, namely the Kohanim, they know how korbanos work. It's for them. They're the ones who perform it. People who have plenty of time. It's very interesting that the Rabbag says this. They have plenty of time to contemplate it, because it happens to be, if we know how the mishmaros work, your average Kohen worked approximately, in terms of his mishmeret, 2 days in the year. I mean, that's a lot of non-practicing Kohen time. The Chagim, everyone's together, but in terms of the Mishmaros, there's 24 Mishmaros. Each Mishmaros goes twice a year and split up into Bati, Obos, etc. What's he doing the rest of the year? Rabbag says he needs to be ready for that day when it's his time. He needs to be in tune. He needs to be au fait with what's going on in Korbanos, how it works. And that's why not anyone can bring a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. You've got to know how it works, you've got to be ready, and you have to have readied yourself. That's kohanim. Ela, except, says Ralbag, Shahatorah hitira lasos kol ish hayosher be'einav. But the Torah hitira allowed anyone to do that which is correct in his eyes, lizabeach ulekater bebomos, to offer korbanos on bomos, ad bo'am el hamenucha vel hanachala, until they arrived at the center of korbanos, the Beis HaMikdash, that is to say, and at that point, you hand it over to the professionals, you hand it over to the people, that if you need korbanos, korbanos are going on there. K'moshin eskar b'Torah, as the Torah itself says, "Kidei sheyis yashru l'avodas Hashem yisbarach," in order that they be fully aligned with service of Hashem. Mipnei mashehut ubo me'avodos hanasos l'Elohim acherim. It was so deeply embedded in them that this is how avoda works, quote unquote avoda, with regards to avoda zara. Yachshavu, they think shelo yeh Hashem yisbarach eloka im lo yavdu bazeh ha'ofan. They don't feel that Hashem is really their God if they don't have the option of offering korbanos to Him, and that is what's behind Bomos, says Ralbag. So it's really fascinating, because we see loud and clear Ralbag himself is distinguishing, when it comes to Korbanos, between the center of Avoda, which is the Beis HaMikdash, that's the domain of the Kohanim, that's Korbanos as they are establishing the well-being of existence itself, and then beyond that you have Bomos, which is a concession for people. And the truth is, says Meshech Chochma, this distinction, again, between Bomos and the Beis HaMikdash, in a sense, is expressed earlier than Rishonim, in the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Maseches Zvachim, as we know, Zvachim is all about Korbanos, and the Mishnah towards the end of Zvachim states, briefly, Ein Reach Nichoach Beboma Ketana. There is no Reach Nichoach in a private altar. And what does Reach Nichoach mean? It's a very elusive phrase. We hear it a lot. Reach Nichoach Lashem. Rashi explains, Reach Nichoach is Nachas Ruach Lefanai. It's pleasing for Hashem that His will has been performed. Nachas Ruach Lefanai, She'amarti Benaseis Ritzoni. That's Reach Nichoach. And the Mishnah states explicitly, there is no Reach Nichoach in Obama. But why not? A korban in Obama is also a korban. Why is it a Reach Nichoach? says Meshech Chochma, based on our thesis, we can understand, because the korban of Obama doesn't represent Ratzon Hashem. It doesn't represent what Hashem wants. If the people didn't want it, there would be no such thing. If the people didn't need it, so to speak, there would be no such thing. Korbanos in the Beis Hamikdash, that's Ratzon Hashem. That is an active and positive procedure. Whereas korbanos elsewhere, if people need it, so be it. But that's not called Reach Nichoach. That's not called Nachas Ruach Shenaseis Ratzoni. So we've gone, in a sense, back in time. It begins with Meshech Chochma, and then he takes us back to Ralbag, who essentially preceded him in this very thesis, and then he takes it further back to the Mishnah in Zvachim, which distinguishes in terms of Reach Nichoach. How much further back can one go? Says Meshech Chochma, one more station to the Pasuk in Tehillim. In Tehillim Nun Aleph, known as the Mizmor of Tshuva, in fact. In Tehillim Nun Aleph, so towards the later Psukim, it says as follows. Pasuk Yud Ches. This is David HaMelech talking to Hashem. Ki lo tachbot zevach ve'eteina. You have no desire for a zevach, for a korban, that I should give it. Ola lo tirtze. You don't wish to have an ola, a burnt offering. That's a very interesting thing to say. David HaMelech is saying, you don't really want korbanos. Well, why not? Is that true? What about all the mitzvahs of korbanos? But then two psukim later, a pasuk which is well known to us from the Siddur, it says, Heitiva b'rtzoncha es tzion, Tivne Chomos Yerushalayim. David HaMelech asks, be good to Tzion, and build the walls of Yerushalayim, meaning build up Jerusalem. And the final pasuk, Az Tachbot Zivchei Tzedek, Ola V'Chalel. And then you will desire rightful korbanos, Ola V'Chalel, Az Tachbot Zivchei Tzedek. So the question is, does Hashem want korbanos, or does he not want korbanos? Within the space of three psukim, David HaMelech has gone from no to yes. Ki lo tachbot zevach, az tachbot zivchei tzedek. So what is the difference between them? The answer, says Meshech Chochma, is tivnech chomos Yerushalayim, because the earlier pasuk is dealing before Yerushalayim has been rebuilt. This is David HaMelech's own time. There is not yet a Beis HaMikdash. What is there? Bamos, says David HaMelech. Bamos lo tachbos. That's not something that Hashem desires particularly, but there will come a time that he does. When Yerushalayim is built, and the Beis HaMikdash is in the center, az tachbot zivchei tzedek. And that now is the full line up from Meshech Chochma, Ralbag, Mishnah, David HaMelech himself, bearing out this distinction. So that is a very profound, I believe, statement on the part of Meshech Chochma, and it is his way harmonizing all areas of Torah and all range of sources. There is a very interesting comment with regards to korbanos that is quoted by Rashi, the beginning of Perek Beis. Perek Aleph is Ola, broadly, Ola, and more particularly Ola from an animal, Ola, burnt offering from an animal, from Bakar, from Tzon, from Ola Sa'of. And then Perek Beis begins another type of korban, which is a mincha, which is a meal offering. It comes from flour. And the pasuk reads, "V'nefesh ki takriv korban mincha l'Hashem." If a soul will offer a mincha, a meal offering for Hashem, so let's hear korbano. The korban should be fine flour. And Rashi, it's quite a well-known comment of Rashi, notes in the name of Chazal that the way the person has been described changes. Meaning, until now we've referred to the person as Adam. That's how Perek Aleph begins, Adam ki yakriv mikem, and so on and so forth. But then in Perek Beis it shifts to nefesh, a soul. When did a person become a soul? Isn't a person always a soul? And that's where Rashi says, Lo ne'emar nefesh b'chol korbanos nedava, ela b'mincha. The term nefesh is never used with regards to voluntary korbanos, only when it comes to the mincha, the meal offering. Why? Says Rashi, because who brings a mincha? Mi darko lisnav b'mincha, who brings a meal offering? Ani, poor person. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's poor, but he's put himself out. That's all he can afford. And he might feel that he's of the of the really neglected area of korbanos. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Male ani alav ki ilu hikriv nafsho. I consider it as if he's offered his own soul. That's why when it comes to the korban that the oni brings, the minchas oni nefesh, like he offered his soul. And that it's a very beautiful comment of Rashi, but there is what to illuminate even further here. There is a very interesting comment of the Medrash. It's in the Yalkut Shimoni in Sefer Yishaya, and the Medrash states, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu viter lanu slicha achas mishalo." Hashem has waived, in a sense, has forgone one aspect of slicha. He's been mevater in a certain respect when it comes to slicha. What is the vitur? What's the concession? Zo asiris ha'eifa. That's in the case of asiris ha'eifa, the tenth of an eifa, which is the mincha, which is the meal offering. That's a vitur. Hashem has conceded. Benefesh ki takriv. And the question is, what exactly is it about the mincha, the meal offering, right, perik beis of Vayikra, that constitutes a concession? I mean, it costs less, but a bird costs less than an animal, and a mincha costs less than a bird. But why is the mincha called a vitur in that way? And this question is discussed by Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz in the Drushas in Sefer Yaros Devash, Drush Tesvav. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz says, from the very beginning, we find there's something about an animal korban that is more preferred, seemingly, than a vegetable korban or a mincha korban. I mean, that brings us back to early days, Cain and Hevel, and Hashem was favorable towards Hevel's korban, but not Cain's. And the question is, why not? What's the difference? And there's many explanations, but many Mefarshim say because it wasn't really correct for Cain to bring from the vegetable kingdom, right? Just from his domain. And the reason why is because a korban is meant to represent the person, and a person is not fully represented by physical matter. A person is a living being, and he's represented by another living being. I mean, that's really an important part of what korbanos are. A person has a physical component, right? His body is a spiritual component, his nefesh. And therefore, he's only faithfully represented by something which also has a guf and a nefesh. That's an animal or a bird. Whereas if it's a mincha, or if it's just from the vegetable species, so that has guf, that's a physical thing, but it doesn't have that spiritual component. And that was what was lacking in Cain's korban. Now, if that's true, then this should give us now new perspective on what it means for the Oni to bring a mincha. Because when an Oni brings a mincha, it sounds like it's Cain all over again. It sounds like he's taking that route where he's only representing himself physically and not spiritually. On the one hand, on the other hand, you can say, well, that's all he can afford. But what is this? Says the Yaros Tvash, that's the vitur, that's the concession. In the words of the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu viter lanu slicha achas mishalo. Hashem forgoes something from his. And when it says from his, it means because you're actually, you are not presenting the spiritual component. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's side. Hashem says, you don't have a spiritual component, that's okay, spirituality lives with me. But you brought something from the physical, and that's all you can afford, that's okay. But that's a vitur, that's a concession, not demanding from the oni, who can't afford more, to represent both parts of himself. Rather, the guf is represented by the mincha. What about the nefesh? Hashem is mevata. Hashem says, your nefesh is mine anyway, that's in my domain, and I'm mevata, you don't have to represent that. But there is perhaps a deeper idea here, and that is brought out by Rabbi Yisachar Teichtal, who's famous as the author of the Sefer Eim HaBonim Semecha, and also has Tshuvas, Mishneh Sachir. And slightly developing what it is that he says, the truth is that the spiritual component, or the nefesh component from the poor person, it is there. It's just not in the mincha. So where is it? It's in the Ani. It's in the poor person. It's hard for him. It's harder for him to bring a mincha than it is for a rich person to bring a behemah. And this brings us to a fascinating idea. That's why when the Ani brings his mincha, which is just a meal offering, the Torah calls it, that's nefesh. He's brought his nefesh. Why? Because he's put his heart and soul into it. His nefesh is in. He's done his best. He's mustered. He's scraped pennies together until he brings his mincha. That's where the nefesh is. It's the Ani's nefesh that's in the korban. And therefore, on the one hand, it's a vitur, shall we say, that Hashem doesn't demand that you bring something with the nefesh. It already has nefesh in it. The poor person's meal offering has a lot of soul in it. It's got the Ani's soul in it. And it's a fascinating idea because now it's like a composite korban. Normally, a rich person, where's the soul of the korban? In the korban. But where, for the Ani, where's the soul of the korban? In the Ani. And that's what he's offering because he's exerting himself and he's extending himself in order to bring this korban. That's where the soul is. And this teaches us a fascinating idea, and that is that in this respect, the korban is shared. It's shared between the efforts of the Ani and the actual korban. And this then becomes, in a sense, a springboard for other concepts that we find in Chazal, which are the equivalent of a korban, where there's no korban there at all. It's pure presentation on the part of the person. The Gemara says in Maseches Sota, and it's actually based on Tehillim Nun Aleph. The Gemara says in Sota Daf Hei, you know, if a person brings an ola, so he has the merit of an ola. And if he brings a mincha, he has the merit of a mincha. However, says the Gemara, but if a person is humble, a person is contrite, he has the merit of all korbanos. How so? But the Pasuk says, Zivche Elokim ruach nishbara. Hashem's offerings are a broken spirit, broken in a good way, not haughty. And Zivche, in the plural, it's like he has all of them. But how does he have the merit of all of them if he hasn't brought any of them? But the point is, this person, through his personality, this person through his contrition, this person through his humility, he has in his own way achieved the korban state. Because what a korban represents is a person offering up, so to speak, or nullifying existence towards the source of all existence. Someone who's humble is also nullifying his existence. He's nullifying the bloated existence that exists within a haughty person, within an arrogant person. Someone who's contrite, someone whose spirit is broken in that positive way, they have discarded an aspect of their existence, which is this very arrogant way of looking at things and looking at themselves. That's a korban. It's all korbanos. That's nefesh. The person has essentially offered that aspect of nefesh. And that is something that which can exist in all places and all times. So it's really fascinating to see how the concept of korbanos, it begins with the korban, but then sometimes it can be shared with the person and sometimes it can be taken on entirely by the person. Well, I'd like to perhaps take the sugya, shall we say, of korbanos from Chumash Beikra, perhaps closer to our times. And indeed, there is a most fascinating discussion which takes place, begins with Rishonim, but really takes off in the Acharonim with regards to offering korbanos nowadays, that is to say, in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, for the record, although it's not discussed at length, the first person who is mentioned as having made a move to do this is one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yechiel Miparis. Rabbeinu Yechiel Miparis, as his name suggests, was from Paris. He came to Eretz Yisrael when the Jews were expelled from France, whenever that was, in the 1100s or whatever that was, or the 1200s. And he took a whole group of his Talmidim and they moved to Eretz Yisrael and they established yeshiva and the yeshiva is called Yeshivat Chachmei Tzarfat. And that's the first of that tradition whereby if you move somewhere else, the yeshiva becomes known as where you came from. And that they were, it's the forerunners of the Mir and the Ponovitch of our time. And so he was the Rosh Yeshiva, the outstanding Torah scholar of that group, Rabbi Chaim Miparis. And It is recorded in a very special sefer, which is called Kaftor Vaferach. Kaftor Vaferach, written by one of the later Rishonim, Rabbeinu Ashtori HaParchi. And that sefer is devoted to matters of Eretz Yisrael. That is the subject of the sefer, Kaftor Vaferach. And Rabbi Ashtori HaParchi notes, he said he heard that Rabbi Chiel Miparis, he wanted to go on to Har Abayis and he wanted to offer korbanos, but he says, more than that, I wasn't able to find out. I don't know why in the end he didn't do it, but it was known that was something that he was very seriously considering doing. Well, the matter kind of rests there, but it was brought back with a vengeance in the 1800s. By a very special individual who was known as Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, a bezin of Rav Kalisch, Drishas Tzion, and he was very adamant that korbanos can and should be brought even nowadays. And to understand the background, and in fact, even before we get to his halachic arguments, which are many and varied, there is a hashkafic point, which is also important. That is to say, part of his outlook almost like demanded that korbanos be brought. And if your outlook demands that korbanos be brought, then from a certain point of view, you know there must be an answer to any halachic objection. You just need to find it. The question as to whether or not he found it remains open to debate. But what is the philosophical backdrop here? Rav Kalischer was of those who subscribed to the view that the Mashiach is someone who needs to be brought actively. That means that the climate needs to be prepared for him, which involves, on a general level, the Jewish people themselves returning to Eretz Yisrael and preparing Eretz Yisrael for him. But within that, the offering of korbanos. And the reason why brings us back to the idea that korbanos themselves allow for the optimum way that the world should be. One could almost say that it is korbanos, says Rav Kalischer, that will make Eretz Yisrael Mashiachtik. They'll prepare the climate fully for the atmosphere that is conducive to the coming of Mashiach will happen through korbanos. So that's a hashkafic point. And on this point itself, there was already a debate as to whether it is correct to assume that this is the way things will be or should be. The opponents, shall we say, or protagonists of the Rav Kalischer pointed out that seemingly the Shmona Esrei refutes his thesis. Shmona Esrei. How so? Because the Gemara tells us in Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin and Daf Yud Ches, that the order of the brachos in the Shmona Esrei, it's bedafka. And the later brachos, they represent, which are about the future, they represent the way we anticipate the future will unfold. And there is a bracha of Es Tzemach David, and Tzemach David is about Mashiach, Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. And there is no mention of korbanos at that stage. Korbanos are mentioned two brachos later in Ritzei. Etc. And therefore, said these opponents in this respect of Rav Kalischer, that as seemingly a very solid point, a very compelling point, that you see from the Shmona Esrei, which again is based on the order, the anticipated order, that Matzmiach Keren Yeshua doesn't need to be preceded by Vasheva Sabod Ledver Beisecha, but rather it can and presumably will precede the restoration of korbanos. Well, Ad Kan, from the realms of Hashkafa, do we understand that korbanos should be there? But now we move to the halachic questions of, but how can they be restored? And we should know the correspondence and the opponents. Europe was a merkacha with regards to this question. The whole place was electrified. The opponents of Rav Kalischer were no less personalities than Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Chasam Sofer, and Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, the Aruch Laner, and numerous others. And we'll begin, because there are five or six points which we'll note in brief, and perhaps at least be yotzei in the most general way. There's a whole literature, of course, on this on this question. So the first question revolves around the fact that can one bring korbanos in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash? Rav Kalischer wasn't talking about rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. He's saying even without a Beis HaMikdash, you can already bring korbanos. Well, it happens to be that there are certain opinions in the Mishnah that you can. Rabbi Yehoshua, there's a Mishnah in Eduyos. Rabbi Yehoshua states, Shamati shemakrivim afa pi she'ein habayis bonu. I have heard that you can bring korbanos even without the Beis HaMikdash being built. And the basis of this position is the understanding that the kedusha of Har HaBayis, which supports, so to speak, which is the infrastructure for bringing korbanos, is still there. I mean, it didn't go away. Which means if the kedusha is there, and this, by the way, is the position of Rambam. Rambam says, from the time that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, that kedusha never went away. So you have all the kedusha that you need, so to speak, to allow for the bringing of korbanos, is there. However, there's a problem, because if the kedusha is there, we instantly have an issue because the kedusha is there. Namely, when Har HaBayis possesses its kedusha, it is also for a person who's tamei to go into Har HaBayis. A person who's tamei meis, and certainly to go, or more accurately, to go into where the korbanos could be brought in the temple courtyard. That's a chiyuv kares. So that's a problem. And those people, in one form or another, are partake of Tumas Meis, which means that, by definition, if Har HaBayis can support korbanos, so no one can go there to offer them. However, we do know that there is a certain category of korbanos, korban sibur, communal korbanos, which overrides Tumah. That means, and it's learned from Psukim, and that's the halacha for korban sibur, even someone who's Tomei, and even someone who's Tomei Mace can do the Avoda. Isn't that what the Hashmonaim did? They went to the Beis HaMikdash to restore the Avoda. They're all Tomei Mace. And moreover, not only to offer the korbanos for tzibur, but anything that you need, including building the mizbeach and whatever it is that you need in order to allow for korbanos, can be done for korban tzibur. However, we should note that the discussion has instantly now been cut in half. As if to say, whereas we were talking generally about bringing korbanos, it's now clear it is only a certain type of korban that could be brought, korban sibur. Because for private korban, you can't get onto the Beis HaMikdash. It's got to be korban sibur. Now, interestingly, as soon as you want to bring a korban sibur, you then have another problem. How do you make a korban sibur? What is a korban sibur? A korban sibur belongs to the tzibur. But how does it come to be? Because the tzibur collects funds every year, the machtes hashekel, and from the communal funds, they bring a korban. The entire Jewish people need to be represented. Which means, if you want to bring a korban sibur, it sounds like you're going to have to collect a half a shekel from all the Jewish people. And that's a tough thing to do. Especially because half of them have given it to office already. So how can it happen? Now, that's a problem. And it's not going to happen. I mean, all things being equal, you're not going to get everyone to get Dasha. So where's your korban sibur? The only thing you can bring, it can't exist. Rav Kalischer had an answer. Rav Kalischer said, a korban sibur needs to belong to the tzibur. Now, the natural way that happens is that they collect half shekel and they purchase it. However, it is also true that a person could donate something to the tzibur, as long as he does it with a full heart, and he says, I hereby, this is mine, but I give it over to the tzibur. At that point, it belongs to the tzibur. It's a very direct route. There's no machtes hashekel, they didn't pay for it, they didn't collect for it, but they own it now, because a good-hearted person gave it to them. And therefore, says Rav Kalischer, an individual will take one of his korbanos and one of his animals and give it to the tzibur, you have a korban tzibur. Now, that's still not so simple. And the reason why is because in order to give it to the tzibur needs to accept it. Now, the question is, how accepting do we imagine the cross-spectrum of the Jewish people would be to someone giving them an animal to offer in the Beis HaMikdash? That's a tough question. Many Jews may not be particularly interested, or some may even be ambivalent or worse, but they're also part of the Jewish people, so it's very difficult to give something to a community where certain segments of the community aren't interested in receiving it until further notice. So maybe it can't be a Korban Sivor. To that, the response is, and it's a rather elitist, shall we say, response, or perhaps more correctly, a paternalistic response. But the response on behalf of Rav Kalischer is, it's only the people who would accept and appreciate what a Korban Sibur is that we're concerned about, that they should accept it. As far as we're concerned, they are the Sibur that we're talking about. Other people, we'll have to have a word with them when the time comes, but if they're not interested, they're not part of the Sibur in this respect, and therefore it can still be done. Okay. However, those who contested this and says, no, there will never be a Korban Sibur, if that's true, we have gone from discussing all korbanos to discussing one particular korban. There's only one korban that is immune to all of the above problems, and that is the Korban Pesach. And the reason why is because it is the only korban out of all the korbanos that, on the one hand, it's a private korban, so you don't have to worry about the tzibur, but we have a special limud that it overrides tumah. In other words, we needed beforehand, we couldn't use private korbanos because that doesn't override tumah. But we couldn't have a communal korban because the community doesn't own a korban. But this is the one that satisfies both. It's a private korban, but it overrides tumah. And that's why this became almost more like an annual discussion now. Come Pesach, everyone wants to know this. If it's going to work for anything, it's going to work for Korban Pesach. And interestingly, there are those who sought to adduce evidence that the Korban Pesach was offered even after the Beis HaMikdash. How so? It comes from the Haggadah, or more correctly, from the Mishnah. Because Rabbi Gamliel famously says, with regards to Seder night, if a person did not say Pesach Matzon Maror, lo yotza yedei chavosu, he has not fully fulfilled his obligation. And in the Mishnah, our girsa in the Haggadah is, Pesach shehayu avoseinu ochlem beos mancha beis hamikdash hayakan. The Pesach that they used to eat. You do not wish to point to anything on Seder night and say, this Pesach, there could be fallout from that. But in the original Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel said, Pesach zeshanu ochlim, because Rabbi Gamliel ate the Pesach. But the question is, who's Rabbi Gamliel? And where does he live? And when does he live? Rabbi Gamliel is famous. Rabbi Gamliel lives in Yavne, after the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash. But he is on record as saying, Pesach zeshanu ochlim. Sounds like Rabbi Gamliel bore a Korban Pesach even when there was no Beis HaMikdash. However, it's not so simple. Even this is not so simple. There are those who say explicitly this was Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, but it's a bit more involved because there were actually two Rabbi Gamliels. They were grandfather and grandson, and they straddled the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash respectively. The Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne lived after the Churban, but his grandfather, known as Rabbi Gamliel Hazokin, the elder Rabbi Gamliel, lived at the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And there are those who maintain that the Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah, in Arve Psakim, Pesach Zesha on Oaklin, was Rabbi Gamliel Hazokin, in which case we have no proof that the Pesach was brought, but still an argument that it could be brought. Okay. What's next? Everything we've said so far hinges on the idea that the Harabayas has the Kedusha that could support Korbanos. But, and which is the opinion of the Rambam, it sometimes happens that a position which is held by the Rambam is disputed by his primary disputant, namely the Raivad. And this is just such a case. Whereas the Rambam says that the Kedusha remains, okay, but the Raivad says, no, it doesn't. He takes a contrary opinion. It's a very interesting machlokas, but there it is. And therefore, they said to, and this was Rabbi Akiva Eger's point. So says Rabbi Zvi Hirsch Kalischer, are you going to take the achrayus that the halacha is like the Rambam and not like the Raivad in this? We don't have a clear psak in this regard. Even if it's like the Raivad, you can't bring it. You can't bring korbanos there. Rav Kalischer had a response, and his response, especially in terms of our introduction, is quite fascinating. Rav Kalischer says, "It's okay, because if worst case scenario, namely like the Raivad, the Harabais doesn't have the kedusha, So that means in the absence of that Kedusha, so Bomos are back. Because where do Bomos exist? When there's no Mishkan, or when there's no Beis HaMikdash, or where you don't have the Kedusha. If you look in the Gemara, you'll see that as long as the Har HaBayis has its Kedusha, Bomos are out. But if that Kedusha should terminate or be removed, then Bomos are back. And therefore, says Rav Kalisher, you can go up there either way. And as they say in the classics, Mimonavshach, whichever way you look at it, you're okay. Because if the Kedusha's there, good, you're offering a korban, midin mikdash. And if the Kedusha's not there, you're offering a korban, midin bama. That was Rav Kalisher's response. However, as Rav Pesach Frank points out, it's not so straightforward. Because as we established already, you don't offer the same korbanos on a bama as you do in the Beis HaMikdash. A bama is only for voluntary korbanos. The Beis HaMikdash is only for, not only, but incorporates all the other korbanos as well. And therefore, which korban are you going to bring? If you're not sure whether you can bring the korbanos to the Beis HaMikdash, it's got to be voluntary. But if it's like the Rambam and the Kedusha is there, you can't bring a voluntary korban on pain of kares. And therefore, it's harder to see how this would work actually, because you'd have to choose your korban in that way. And at this point, it is most worthwhile bringing in the final comment of Meshech Chochmah from his introduction. This is not the lightest of topics, but we are trying to stick to the highlights here. You see, we've presented a very simple binary picture. It's either Mikdash or not. If it's Mikdash, you have Mikdash Korbanos. If not, you have Bomos Korbanos, because Bomos always rush in when there's no Beis HaMikdash. However, says Meshech Chochmah, one of the famous Baalei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen, states that nowadays, even if there's no Kedushas HaMikdash, you still can't bring Bomos. That's out of the blue. I mean, there's no more Bomos. Forget about it. It doesn't make a difference anymore. Even if the, not only if there is Kedushas HaMikdash, for sure you can't bring Bomos. But even if there isn't, Bomos don't come back. Why not? Says Meshech Chochmah, in his words, Ubazen is galali sod. Through our thesis, I think I understand what's behind what Reb Chaim Cohen says. You know why Reb Chaim Cohen says, Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen says that there's no bomas anymore? Because bomas are obsolete. In our analysis, coming back to Meshech Chochmah's introduction, what is the value of bomas? What justifies the existence of bomas? Because people can't relate to religion without it anymore. Why not? Because all the other religions have them, and the Jewish people couldn't disassociate themselves from that. It was one step away from them. But then something happened, as the Gemara describes in two places. Sanhedrin 2nd Perek, Yuma 7th Perek. At the beginning of the 2nd Commonwealth, when they were building the 2nd Beis HaMikdash, or as they built the 2nd Beis HaMikdash, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola petitioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu to remove the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says their prayers were answered. And from that point on, we don't find Avodah Zarah to be the issue that it plagued the Jewish people. They said, we won't survive. Look what happened. It ravaged the Jewish people throughout all of their history from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the first exile. If we don't get rid of it, we're asking for trouble. Our days here are numbered. And they davened it should be removed, and it was removed. Says Meshech Chochmah, if the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah is removed, there's no need for bomas anymore. Because people no longer have that association. And isn't it true? People no longer have that association that they can't relate to Judaism, they can't relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu without korbanos. Of course they can. They never used to be able to. The Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah is what's behind that. But if the Yetzirah has gone away, so there's no need for bomos, and therefore, says Meshech Chochmah, if there's no Kedusha of Mikdash, you can't bring korbanos there at all. So it's very interesting to see how all these things dovetail, all these elements and lines of the discussion. Okay. Further, says Rav Kalisher, another objection here. Rav Kalisher really had, he was made of steel. Even if you don't need the Beis HaMikdash to offer korbanos, you need the Mizbeach for sure. And interestingly, as much as we noted that the Nusach or the Seder of the weekday Shmona Esrei seems to go against Rav Kalischer, but he actually adduced proof for his position from the Nusach elsewhere in Tefillah, from Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. What do we say Musaf of Rosh Chodesh? We say the following: Mizbeach Chadash B'tzion Tachin, establishing a Mizbeach. For last Rosh Chodesh Nalelav, Usiu Ezein Eretz Razon, Uvavodas Beis Hamikdash Nismach Kulanu. So Rav Kalischer said, you've got four phrases here. Phrase one is the Mizbeach. It's not until later on that we talk about the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't that tell you that we're looking forward to a time when we have the Mizbeach and can bring Karbonos even without yet the Beis HaMikdash? Very interesting. I mean, the whole Siddur is now brought into the melee. Okay, there's just one problem. All you need is the Mizbeach. But it is unanimously agreed upon that You need to build the Mizbeach exactly where it should be. It needs to be exactly the right size and exactly the right location. Now, say the opponents of Rav Kalischer, go find the exact location of the Beis HaMikdash. Why is it so difficult? Because it's a three-way dispute in the Mishnah. It's number one. And number two, even if you will paskin, you'll make your psak. We never have to paskin on things like this. Fine, you'll paskin. Even if you'll conclude which opinion it is and where exactly it is, but how do you know where to measure from? You then need to discover exactly where the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash begins and where it ends. These are very difficult things. And you need to measure it in terms of amos. And how big is an amma? That's also not so simple. And therefore, even the practicalities, but if you get the place of the Mizbeach wrong, it's like it's not there. And the whole thing is for naught. And that's a difficult thing. What does Rav Kalischer say? Work it out. Further, this is a question that perhaps is easier to respond to, but who's going to bring the korban? You need a kohen, of course. Okay, who's a kohen? Well, the answer is Mr. Cohen. But how do you know Mr. Cohen's a kohen? Which is a good shaila. In other words, how does one know? He duchens and he gets rishon, but that's because we think he's a kohen. But how do we know he's a kohen? Most kohanim, that in our experience, are what is known as kohanim chazaka. That means that they have a presumed status of Kohanim, which is a very strong presumption. And it's certainly enough for Duchening, etc. and so forth. Is it enough for everything? Some say yes. But the Rambam says when it comes to the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, they made a special mila, a special added measure. You need to be able to demonstrate your lineage of Kohanim all the way back to establish Kohanim. The question is, can you find such a person? Well, it happens to be, some maintain that they can, that they can trace their lineage all the way back, but you'll need to choose very carefully from your Kohanim, someone who has documentation that he's Kohen all the way back. Okay, so you found your Kohen. What's next? The avoda of a Kohen is only kosher if he's wearing Big Day Kahuna. Okay, so make Big Day Kahuna. How hard can that be? Well, it might be impossible. And the reason why is because one of the very interesting garments of the Kohen is the avnet, is the belt or the sash. Okay, what's interesting about the avnet is one of its components, one of its ingredients, is techeles. As we've said many times over the last few weeks, techeles, vagaman, telashani, etc. So the avnet has tcheles in it. In order for a korban to go through, you're going to need a kohen wearing big day kuna, amongst them the avnet with tcheles. You're going to need to find the chilozah now. Where are you going to find it? And once again, Rabbi Kiva Eger asked this question: find the chilozah to get the tcheles. And moreover, not only was it certainly for sure it was not known, and the question continues: is it known now what the tcheles was? It's also not so clear as to what color tcheles is. In other words, what the chilazon is that it comes from, and what color is tcheles. You don't want to get the color wrong. But there are at least four views as to what color tcheles is, ranging from light blue, dark blue, violet, greenish blue. And you can't be all of them. And that's a one in four chance. Again, you have to paskin. Now, it happens to be that at the very same time that this discussion was happening, where's the Chilazon, there was someone who was actually set out in search of the Chilazon. And that was famously the Radzina Rebbe, Rev Lehner, Rev Gershon Henoch Lehner. And so it's very interesting because generally we focus on the tzitzis side of things. That to say, now everyone can fill the mitzvah of tzitzis. But Rav Kalischer had a very keen eye on on this whole discussion because you can also then now make the big day kahuna. Now, everyone argued on the Radzina Rebbe, except for the Radzina Hasidim. but there, in a sense, that was more about tzitzis. But the issue of tzitzis is not as burning an issue as it is for it. It's not as critical, with all due respect to tzitzis, for a simple reason. It's not an avera to have blue tzitzis. Which means if the worst case scenario, that this is not the chilazon, or this is not the correct color, the worst case scenario is, some of your tzitzis are blue. The Jewish people have lived through worse. But within the context of Bidei Kahuna, if you got the tcheles wrong, it is exponentially worse. It is actually infinitely worse. Because the big day kahuna don't work if the tcheles doesn't work. And by the way, some of the avnet is linen, and tcheles is wool. It's only okay because you have the tcheles. If you've got the tcheles wrong, you're instantly wearing shatnez. And if the basic big day kahuna don't work, you walk onto the parabias or into the temple courtyard ill-prepared or wrongly dressed, that's a chi of kares because the korban won't work. And the whole thing is fafal. Now, Rav Kalischer claimed, which is a very bold claim, that actually you don't need the chilazon for... You only need the chilazon for tzitzis, for the tcheles of tzitzis. But when it comes to Big Day Kahuna, the Avnet, you don't need it. As long as you have the right color, you don't need it. Why does he say that? He says Rav Kalischer, because if you look in the Rambam, in Hilchus Tzitzis, the Rambam talks about the Chilazon. In Hilchus, Klei HaMikdash, when he talks about the Avnet, he only says it's got to be Tcheles, but he doesn't talk about the Chilazon. So Rav Kalischer concludes, luckily for him, or fortunately for him, you don't need the Chilazon. If you don't have it, worst case, you don't need it. However, the response to that was, it doesn't mean you don't need it. If you read the Rambam in order, he's already told you in Hilchos Tzitzis where the tcheles comes from. He didn't repeat it in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, but he's relying on the fact that you started at the beginning. And that's the whole now Rambam methodology question. Does the Rambam do that? And even if it's true that you don't need the chilazon, you've got to get the color right. And once again, we're back to our four opinions. So I would say these are some of the main points. We, of course, have generalized greatly. And there's a very thick sefer called Drishas Tzion from Rav Kalischer, who goes through all of this. And there's tshuvas everywhere about it until our time. The greats of our time, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Waldenberg, and others were still discussing this question. But these are, as we said, some of the highlights. But perhaps to conclude in a way which is within reach for us, barring a person going and offering korbanos. The Gemara in Megillah, and everything we know about this comes from the Gemara. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph, states that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram Avinu, when the Beis HaMikdash is there, people bring korbanos. And when the Beis HaMikdash isn't there, let them involve themselves in the Torah that relates to korbanos, and it will be considered as if they brought korbanos. Now, to what degree is it considered? We don't know. But the Gemara says, Ma'ale ani aleihem. And that perhaps, if we indeed are looking to adopt the position of Rav Kalischer in appending, actually bringing korbanos, but to achieve the effect, to achieve the atmosphere of korbanos, so that's a push for being involved in the Torah of korbanos, and indeed that's something that if we pay attention to, is certainly the time is right, as we've opened Toras Kohanim, the Chumash of Korbanos in Vayikra, and Mitzvah Hashem, with further discussions on this matter. We'll leave it over there for this.